Hello, Marvelites! You're listening to This Week in Marvel, episode number 541. I'm Ryan Panagos, aka Agent M.
And I'm Lorraine Sink, Agent of Chaos, Agent of Good Times, Agent of Snack Foods.
Ooh. Yeah. Lorraine, break it down for me. Favorite snack foods, go.
All I can think about is cookies, because Ryan, I have been on a low sugar diet. And listen, there's this place called The Popery. It's in Mount Kisco, New York. I've never been there, but I just scroll their Instagram looking at their stuffed cookies. It's like a turducken, but a cookie. So it's like a chocolate chip cookie on the outside, and then it's got like an Oreo inside or like a different cookie inside. And honestly, it's all I can think about.
Wow. I want to go there. I know that my daughter and wife are going to make me quote unquote daddy cookies this afternoon, which is really sweet. And I was like, what are daddy cookies? And Catherine just shrugged her shoulders and go, I don't know. And so it's like, it's going to be a wonderful mystery as
mud
we find
pies.
Out.
Mud pies. Yum, yeah. Yum.
Hey, hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is This Week in Marvel, the official Marvel podcast, where we talk about what's happening this week in Marvel, from games, comics, movies, TV, and all the other stuff that we are excited about. This week, we've got some fun stuff to talk about. And our guest later on in the show is author and friend Brad Meltzer. He's coming on to talk about his new book and talk about comics and give some really cool stories, man. He talks about George Perez in such a way that my heart melted.
We got lots of great stuff coming up this week on the show as well. First of which is a really cool experience. Marvel Studios is teaming up with Secret Cinema. They are an entertainment company that specializes in these sort of immersive film and TV events. And there is going to be a new cosmic adventure built around Marvel Studios' Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which is going to run August to December of this year at a secret London location. And it's going to be the first of three collaborations between Secret Cinema and Disney Studios. And I'm just going to read you the synopsis here. It sounds super fun. You can join the infamous Ravagers, choose your Ravager clan, dodge the Nova Corps, and set off on an action-packed adventure in search of galactic riches and interplanetary fame with an awesome mixtape of funk and mischief, eye-popping space spectacle galore. You and your crew can enjoy the thrills of Contraxia, brave the dangers of Kiln, and then hustle, smuggle, and bribe your way around in a quest on the lawless planet of nowhere. This sounds super fun. Like, you're going to really be inserted into the hijinks of the Ravagers. Definitely check it out. Tickets go on general sale at 10 a.m. London time on the 14th of March at secretcinema.org. Prices are going to be £47 plus a booking fee. If you're interested, definitely go check it out.
I would love if any of our listeners do go to this. I'm looking at you, Karis. Please let us know. Send us some tweets and some pictures and some details. I definitely want to learn more and more about this. Also, some Guardians of the Galaxy fun stuff this week, because Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind is coming to Epcot at Walt Disney World. And there was a really cool look inside the load area for the attraction posted by Walt Disney Imagineering. You could check it out on social media. It's happening. We're going to be able to experience it so soon.
Yeah, I'm really excited. They showed a bit about like what kind of seating it is, which kind of tells you what kind of experience it is. So definitely go check those out. It's super cool. Also super cool, a little reminder that next week we are kicking off Spidey Beyond Amazing, the 60th anniversary live stream. A reminder to you MU Plus subscribers and annual subscribers, you can celebrate 60 years of Spider-Man with an exclusive Marvel Unlimited event I'll be hosting, so please come join us. You can sign up, and if you're not already a Marvel Unlimited annual or annual plus member, you can subscribe to annual plus right now at marvel.com/MU-beyondamazing. And then you can also attend the virtual event in addition to having all of the wonderful things that Marvel Unlimited offers you. And of course, if you are already a Marvel Unlimited annual or annual plus member, check your email. They have sent out registration invites that way. And then you can tune in. We're going to have awesome Q&As, behind the scenes interviews, and lots of exciting stuff all about Spider-Man's past, present, and future. We're going to have some really amazing folks that have been Spider-Man creators throughout the years. So definitely come join us. That is going to be at 7 p.m. Eastern time on March 16th, which is next Wednesday.
Ooh, going to be very exciting. Look forward to that. Oh, how about some more Spider-Man stuff in this wonderful 60th anniversary year? Because in June, we have Amazing Spider-Man number 6, which is actually also Amazing Spider-Man number 900. And it's a big boy. It's going to be written by Zeb Wells, who's been writing the series, and art by Ed McGuinness. It's going to be really cool. It's got Sinister Six stuff in there and something called the Sinister Adaptoid. Lorraine, he looks rad.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love an Adaptoid, especially when it's been adapted to have some abilities like Doc Ock's and Vulture's and Kraven the Hunter and Electro and Mysterio and Sandman. Just a sinister... sick fun time.
A sinister sick fun time indeed.
You know that old adage.
Speaking of other ways to have a fun time, let's talk about Hulkling and Wiccan number 1. This is the print issue of the really great Hulkling and Wiccan Marvel Infinity comic that was released a while back by writer Josh Trujillo and artist Jody Nishijima. So it's going to be really neat to have that collected in a single giant-sized print issue. It's got new covers by Peach Momoko and Luciano Vecchio. If you haven't read this already on Marvel Unlimited, here's a little synopsis. Hulkling and Wiccan have found their happy ending at last. Or have they? Dun, dun, dun.
No, they just got to be married and be happy.
When a magical artifact shows them the paths not taken in life and love, will Billy and Teddy find their way back to each other? Will they even want to? Dun, dun, dun. I mean, look, I feel like I'm that Free Britney guy. Like, just leave them alone.
You know what? Honestly, though, like, these kids have been through the ringer.
Oh, so much.
They've had so much in their sweet little baby lives. Just, like, let them experience young love without the trauma.
I know. Seriously. It's coming out June 15th in comic shops, just in time for Pride Month, which is... this year is just flying by.
Welcome to spring, babies. We're here. Also coming up this year is the 60th anniversary of Thor. And to celebrate that, we're talking Thor, Lightning, and Lament number 1, which is coming June 29th. It's going to be written by Ralph Macchio with art by Todd Knock, cover by Ron Lim. And this is going to be a really great entry point for the Thor mythos. Obviously, he's an iconic character, and it's time to celebrate his 60th, so let's do it. Here is a little bit about the story. Thor has abandoned Asgard in its great hour of need, and he has left it in the hands of his half-brother Loki in the absence of his father Odin. So with Asgard under assault by legions of trolls and the Lady Sif hovering near death due to a possibly fatal wound suffered in battle, this series is going to ask, can anyone save the Golden City from annihilation? This sounds so fun. It's classic Thor in Asgard fun. I love a Thor in Asgard story. Some good fantasy, kind of epic tales sort of vibes.
Yeah. This is a kind of story just to like, hey, if you've never read a Thor comic, this is some of the characters. This is what's going on. Maybe you've seen the movies and you're curious what the comics are like. This will give you a little bit of vibe of it. Ralph has been involved with Thor comics for decades, literally. Decades mm-hmm. as a writer or as an editor. Todd Knock is our sweet boy friend, and he's an amazing artist. He can do so much. Got a cover by Ron Lim, who's legitimately one of the greats, one of my favorites. And we're celebrating Thor's 60th anniversary this year, so time to read as many friggin' Thor comics as you can get your face on.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Yeah. Speaking of getting your face on, I hope everybody got their faces on Gritty, the NHL mascot for the Philadelphia Flyers, because there was some wonderful quote-unquote hashtag content recently. So we did a really cool thing. I think previously I've told everybody about some collaborations we've done with different sporting teams and organizations. We've done stuff with NBA, and we've done plenty of stuff with minor league NHL, and we're doing some cool stuff with the minor league baseball this year. And then this one, we actually made an exclusive Avengers number 3 variant cover that was given to all fans who attended the Philadelphia Flyers versus Chicago Blackhawks game on Saturday, March 5th. And it's a great cover. It's got Gritty and Iron Man on it. It's just tremendous. And then if you actually go to @Gritty, GRITTYNHL on Twitter, you can see a whole bunch of posts of Gritty with the Infinity Gauntlet, which, come on, it's so much fun.
Can I tell you, I feel like I actually manifested this, because literally not a day before it was announced, I thought, why haven't we done anything with Gritty? Mm-hmm. Because I feel like he just deserves to be in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
He's an absurd, wonderful character. And then I saw the posting and I was like, I made this happen.
Thank you, Lorraine.
You're so welcome.
Well done. Gritty is truly a treasure to all of us, and I hope we do more team-ups with them.
Something very exciting coming in October is the new book, My Superhero is Black, written by our pal Angelique Roche and New York Times bestselling author John Jennings. I have listened to Angelique tell me many times she has deadlines. So I'm feeling for her. She's kicking butt and taking names along with John Jennings. I can't wait for everyone to get a chance to read this book. It's a nonfiction prose book spotlighting some of the most important Black creators and characters throughout Marvel Comics history.
It's going to offer a really cool examination, a celebration, and a really neat historical overview of Marvel's Black characters and creators, also including personal accounts from prominent Black creators and luminaries about their relationships with Marvel superheroes. You gotta love it.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of Angelique, Marvel's Voices is back. And this week she has an episode coming out with Larry Hama talking about his career in comics, G.I. Joe, the time he ended up in a Broadway show. Honestly, Larry Hama is fascinating.
Amazing. I love him.
He was in a rock band. He's an artist. He's so cool. Not to mention all of his incredible work in comics. So definitely go check out that episode. It's out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Larry is also a U.S. veteran. He's got amazing stories. Mm-hmm. He's seen and done so much. He's had an incredible comic book career. He's got, he's an actor. Go listen to this episode. Celebrate Larry Hama. There should be parades for Larry. He's so great. So definitely go check this out. And then put your ears on my other show, Marvel's Pull List, because this week we have a whole bunch of fun stuff. There's a bunch of picks for us. Devil's Reign Moon Knight, number one, is out this week, which I gotta say, if you are I'm curious about this Moon Knight chap, well then you should read this issue because it is fantastic. Then there's Captain Carter, number one, which is also fantastic. We just had Jamie McKelvey on.
On this show.
Yeah, he was on this show. He's the writer and designer for Captain Carter. And you can read the book now this week. The new Punisher series, which is wild. It's real good. It's real good. It's going to piss some people off. It's going to make some people go, what's going on? It's going to make some people really excited. I can't wait. And then X Deaths of Wolverine number 4, which is,
heck yeah.
Oh my God, it's so bananas. There's some great books out this week. Also, on the show lately, we've been picking a quote, a really ridiculous quote from one of the week's comic books, and then the first person who finds it, I have them tag myself and co-host Jasmine, and maybe they get something fun. Tag us, and we'll talk about it. Find the quote, let us know you saw it, because I know you're listening, and you get something fun. I like to give stuff away. I'll just leave it at that. Also on this episode, we had Marvel Comics assistant editor of Spider-Man Comics, Lindsay Kohick, on. She came on to talk about Black Cat, Queen in Black, which is super, super good. The entire run of 20-plus Black Cat comics that we've had over the last few years has been stellar, stellar, stellar stuff. And we dig into just a couple of issues here, but I think everybody should go read those Black Cat issues. And then finally, we also had a bonus episode of Marvel's Pull List with writer Cody Ziegler, who has just been crushing it. Cody is writing the new Spider-Punk series, and Cody put together a playlist of 35 punk songs. I think he positioned 7 songs for each issue, and so we talk about them. It's just a fun way for me to talk about music I love with a writer I'm really excited about and a book I'm super hyped about. Definitely, definitely want everybody to check that out too.
Yeah. The podcast hits keep on coming. We have the history of Marvel Comics Black Panther. There's episode 5 this week, A Nation Under Our Feet. It's now available. And, you know, this is really looking back to the time we reach 2016, and the Black Panther has experienced decades of adventures, fought countless villains, and teamed up with a lot of Marvel's greatest heroes. But then, in Ta-Nehisi Coates' run, we find T'Challa struggling to define himself as a person, as a hero, as a leader of a world power. And it's, you know, far from the sort of swashbuckling adventures of the character's origins, Black Panther is a ruler with a heavy burden. Ta-Nehisi flips that paradigm of the character and finally puts the expectations of a people on its king. So they really look into, in this episode, can he live up to it? And how does that happen? And of course, if you are not familiar with Mr. Coates's work, you should, I mean, writer of not just incredible comics from Black Panther, Captain America, and beyond, also just an incredible novelist, essayist, journalist, an impressive human being, and a really defining creator of Black Panther in the modern era. I'm very jealous. Nick Stone, the host of the show, got to speak with Ta-Nehisi Coates, and here is a clip of that right now.
Imagine a Marvel editor sliding into your DMs to offer you a job? What? Okay, it didn't go down just like that, but that's still pretty dope.
I think Between the World and Me either was on its way out or it just come out. It was either Will Moss or Tom Brevoort. I can't remember who reached out to me first, but when I reached out first, asked if I would be interested in writing for Marvel, didn't say what, but then called up and said, look, we're looking to do Black Panther. Would you be interested in doing it? I was in. I mean, I was in for Marvel. They could have asked me to write anything and I would have done it.
Listen to the first 5 episodes of the history of Marvel Comics Black Panther right now exclusively on the SiriusXM app and Marvel Podcasts Unlimited on Apple Podcasts. And then episodes will be widely available 1 week later on Pandora, Stitcher, and all major podcast platforms in the U.S. Learn more at SiriusXM.com/Black Panther.
Oh, but we're not done yet because we've got a fiction podcast still rolling in. Marvel's Wastelanders, Black Widow, the final episode, Chapter 10, The Future is Mysterious, is the title, and it is now available. And let's hear a little teaser of the big finale right now.
We're going to take this city back from Red Skull and from AIM.
You're evil.
I'm smart.
Oh my God, what did I just find here?
Miss Romanoff has left the tower.
Don't point that at me.
It's time for us to rise up. Arm yourselves. It is time for a revolution.
Kill Red Skull.
It's everything I warned you about, but so much worse.
What are you doing here? She killed my father. I know everything about her.
Shut it down. Shut it all down.
This place is a time bomb. Everyone in that building is vulnerable.
Someone broke in here a while ago.
You are Yelena, and you are loved.
Join me.
Step back.
All they need to know, all they do know, is that we're going to win.
You just heard the voices of Susan Sarandon as Black Widow, Nate Cordry as Jordan Temple, Chastin Harmon as Lisa Cartwright, and more. Of course, you can listen to all episodes now exclusively on the SXM app and Marvel Podcasts Unlimited on Apple Podcasts. And then, of course, episodes will be widely available 1 week later on Pandora, Stitcher, and all other major podcast platforms in the U.S. Learn more at marvel.com/wastelanders. And if you haven't started listening, this is the time because you can sit and binge the whole ding dang thing in one shot. You going on a car trip? This is your moment.
I love going on car trips.
Road trips? Is that what they call them? I don't know. I don't talk to people anymore except for you, Ryan.
Who else would you need to talk to? Anybody? Look, everybody out
My
there.
My husband is so sad.
Everybody out there, don't talk to anyone else but me. Just give me a call. We'll talk.
There you go.
Which is a lie. I hate talking on the phone. I just loathe it. The phone, talking to people just gives me anxiety. Anyway, let's move on because it's time for our interview this week. It is with writer Brad Meltzer, who's got a brand new book, The Lightning Rod. It is available now. It is friggin' great. It is a sequel to another one of his books. You don't have to read The Escape Artist, his first book in this series, to get into The Lightning Rod, but they're both really good. They're intense, great thrillers with cool characters, lots of comic book references. We dig into some of that in the conversation. I give Brad crap every time I talk to him to write more comics for Marvel. You friggin' ding-dong. I love him. He's amazing, but he needs to do more for us. He's got a great series of children's books with Marvel legend Chris Eliopoulos. He does so much cool stuff. He's a wonderful guy. Let's listen to that interview right now. It is time to bring back one of our favorites, This Week in Marvel veteran, friend of the show, Mr. Brad Meltzer. Hello, Brad.
I love coming back here because it reminds me of how much swag last time I came, you literally gave my child, my son, you gave him like stuff that I didn't even know you guys made.
What's it like seeing your kids experience Marvel stories as they've grown and you watching them grow up in this age of Marvel?
Why, listen, that's the craziest part. I have 3 kids and my oldest, he likes the movies and he has good taste. He definitely does. So I gave him some Spider-Man stuff, and I'd give him some, you know, here and there stuff. But I remember giving him Born Again. I remember giving him Frank Miller's Born Again, and him going, he came in, I'll never forget, and he's like, "You shouldn't have signed the Kingpin." And I was like, yes, that's the line. That's the closing line that you're supposed to know. And he picked out the right line at the right thing, you know. And my youngest, I remember, had a similar thing with, I finally gave him Kraven's Last Hunt. He was just very interested in that. And he was just making that leap from little kid Marvel to, like, he just read Watchmen. And as far as I'm concerned, like, when your kid can read Watchmen, now it's like you can read just about anything. And so he's the one who's pouring through. But interestingly, he also likes the old stuff. He'll like old Fantastic Four issues, like pre-Byrne. He'll like Jack Kirby FF. And I'm like, oh, you have like a different taste than just here's the good stuff that holds up now and they turned into a TV show or a movie. I don't think anything on this planet makes me feel older and younger in the exact same breath as sharing that with a child.
That's pretty amazing. Let's go back a little bit. You've obviously been on the show, probably answered this question before, but what is your Marvel origin story? How'd you first get connected to the Marvel characters and stories?
My first ones that I remember reading was Marvel Son of Origins. I remember there was this big compilation book. It had the original stories of Daredevil, X-Men, Iron Man, I think was in there. I'm maybe confusing Origins and Son of Origins, the original, but Son of Origins had Nick Fury in there. And then what they also did is then they jumped forward in time. It was like Starenko's Nick Fury. And then it was a modern day take on Daredevil. Not Frank Miller yet, of course, but it was a Vietnam issue story. And I remember reading that first X-Men. It was X-Men and Daredevil that got me. Those were the two that I loved there. I loved Nick Fury's flying car, but I just remember loving the X-Men and that school and that, you know, X-Men to me. And here came these group of kids who were in a superhero school. And I just remember losing my mind for that. X-Men was definitely the first book that I started collecting because obviously Death of Phoenix was around that time. And I was on a, that era was just gold to me. And then I remember finding John Byrne's Fantastic Four. And that really took me for the ride. And in a strange odd way, I felt like Fantastic Four was somehow more integrated. It was like a open door to the Marvel Universe, at least back then. So if you read Fantastic Four, you were going to learn about, yes, you'd have Doom and you'd have Galactus and you'd have New Heralds, but you got like Gladiator from the Shi'ar Empire and you got guest stars galore is, I guess, the best way to say it. You know, I remember Power Man and Iron Fist showing up there and Spider-Man showing up there, and it was going to be, especially on those every 50 issues when they do that, it was like issue number, whatever, something 50. You knew there was going to be some big fight and big crossover. And then obviously I was hooked.
Sure. It's fascinating to think, because that's true, that Fantastic Four being that like focal point, which is right at the core of the Marvel Universe and everything sort of can bounce off of it so easily. And that shifts over time. It's a little bit of the X-Men at times, but then they really go off on their own. Some Spider-Man at times, more off on his own. But now it's really like the Avengers. The Avengers is that core for so many people.
Of course. I love the Avengers because I love George Perez. You know, my wife still has the old Ms. Marvel t-shirt with the black with the yellow lightning bolt, which to me is just the best costume. But back then, it wasn't the Avengers by any stretch. I mean, it was absolutely, like you said, it was Fantastic Four, it was X-Men. Those were the two most popular books. But yeah, as the movie shifted and we all know the story, boy, was it fun to like watch them be that focal point at that point in time.
Have you ever get to work with George Perez?
I did. So let me tell you, Marv Wolfman and George Perez were the first, beyond Alan Moore doing Watchmen, beyond Frank Miller doing Dark Knight, the book that had the biggest impact on me was Teen Titans with Marv and George doing it. And of course, from there, I came and found George on the Avengers. That Avengers 200 cover with the Beast and the Fur will forever be my favorite cover, my favorite rendition of the Beast. You can take the hair, you can make him the Dark Beast, you can do whatever you want. No Beast will be better than George Perez's Beast to me. College, I was such a George Perez nut. There were these George Perez Justice League postcards he had done right after he left from Avengers and he was doing Justice League and he did one shot of everyone. And at the time, they were $5, and it was just too much money for me. I didn't have money growing up, and I was like, I can't spend $5 on postcards. So I let them go, and I couldn't find them. For the next, I feel like, decade, every comic convention I went to, every hotel back room that you would go for, like a crappy convention I would go to, I'd be like, do you have the George Perez postcards? No one had them. There's no internet. There's no way to find them. So I graduate college, and I finally have a paying job, which pays me like so little a year, it was ridiculous. But I took my first paycheck and I bought a classified ad in Comic Buyer's Guide newspaper magazine back then. And I was like, I'm looking for the George Perez postcards. Anyone have them? I'll pay for them. And all these responses come to this little tiny classified ad that's like four lines. And half the people are like, you know, here, just pay me the $5. Or people just send them to me for free. I don't even want them. And one guy sends it to me and says, here, these Perez postcards, they're yours for free. I'm getting divorced. My wife wants to throw away all my comics. So do me a favor. If you send me $10, I have a page of original George Perez art. And if you send me $10, I'll send you the page. And my first thought is, this is a scam, right? I'm not sending someone $10, which was, you know, seemed like a lot of money at the time. But he's like, pay the postage and I'll send you the thing. But I'm like, for 10 bucks, I'm in. And I send the guy $10. And a week or two later, a giant envelope shows up with a piece of George Perez art from Teen Titans in it. And on the back of the art, it said, there's a note on a post-it to the front of it that says, hey, Brad, what's written on the back of this George Perez page has been there since I owned it. I didn't know it until I went to mail it to you, but it made me convinced that this page was forever meant to be yours. And I'm like, what's this guy talking about? And I turn the page over, and on the back of the art in black marker is written one word, Brad.
Come on.
I'm not joking. You can't make it up. It is still, I have it here. Anyway, I was like, I got to meet George Perez. So he has been one of the nicest people in the world to me. Of course, you know, met him at events over and over, but he's just obviously one of the greatest, greatest. And we are talking just after they announced they're reprinting Justice League Avengers in honor of George and for Hero Alliance to benefit George. And I just think, again, kudos to Marvel and to DC for making that happen. That is spectacular.
I didn't even think about it because I've had those collections. It's like one of those places on the bookshelf. I'm like, this is a special thing because it's a great book, but everybody should be able to own that. So hopefully more people can get their hands on it.
Yeah, I didn't realize no one owned it. Everyone today is like, Brad, do you see this? This is a great book. Do you have it? I'm like, of course I have them. Yeah. Every single issue. I'm like, they reference my Green Arrow in it, which I almost lost my mind. And every year on my birthday, as you know, I literally call the editor-in-chief of Marvel and DC and I ask them, can I write Justice League Avengers every year on my birthday? And every year they tell me no, but I will try again this year and I will try again next year and I'll be there the year after that. And so of course I'm like, I have them. Are you kidding me? Although I will tell you, you know what I just got that I never had? I just picked up. I just got the first Marvel DC crossover ever, the Spider-Man Superman one. I'd never read it. Of course I'd seen it a billion times. I have the Batman Hulk one. I have all the others, but I just was too young at that point. And it's so friggin' funny. Half the issue is just setting up the one thing you want is just get them together and let them fight and let them, you know, like do their thing. And it's just the motivations of the villains and what Lex Luthor and Doc Ock are trying to do are just, they're fantastically insane.
Talking a lot about comics. We're also here to talk about some of your prose work. Before we get really into that, obviously, you know, you've written thrillers, nonfiction, children's books, comics, all this stuff. Is there a different approach for you? Obviously, there's different media, but is there a process that you sort of go into that is same across the board, or is it just completely different every time you do a different project?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. And the honest truth is comic books have had a huge impact on how I write everything because that was the first thing I loved. And when I write a thriller like The Lightning Rod, I write it like a script. I know I don't have to see the panels of a page, but I feel like comics for me were like Mr. Miyagi. They trained me in ways that I didn't know they were training me to tell the story. Like a comic is, you know, it's 20 to 22 pages and then there's a cliffhanger. And then you come back next month and it's 22 pages and then there's a cliffhanger. Like that's what my thrillers are. And in fact, when I got put on Green Arrow, all the comic fans started reading the thrillers and they were trying them out. And one reviewer said, you know, I've read three of Meltzer's books right now and they're all paced like comics. And I didn't even know that. I saw it in some guy that posted that and I was like, oh crap, that's exactly what happened. So when I wrote the opening scene of The Lightning Rod, I truly see it in my head the same way I tell a comic book story. And even the kids' books that we do, everyone calls them kids' books. They're comics, let's be honest. The ones that I do with Chris Eliopoulos, amazing, you know, been with Marvel for going on 70 years, 90, yeah. 80 years now. He's so old. I say that only because I know he's listening. But what Chris does, I mean, Chris and I always joke, everyone calls these books kids' books, and they're just comics. They're comics we made for kids. And because we don't call them comics, people who don't read comics will buy them. And if that's what it takes, fine. You're now reading comics.
Yeah. let's go back to the novel, because within the last couple of days, I've mainlined both The Escape Artist and The Lightning Rod, and those are intense thrillers. Enjoy the hell out of them, but like, I had to take a breath. Lightning Rod is the new one, sequel to The Escape Artist. For our listeners who don't know, can you give some details on the stories? But really, the main character is Zig and Nola.
Yeah, so I found both of them kind of based on real incidents in life. I do a lot of work with the USO. I travel around the world entertaining our troops, and they'll bring thriller writers to come in and entertain. And it was there I first heard of Dover Air Force Base. And Dover, if you don't know it, you have seen it. It's that place where you see those flag-covered coffins coming out of the planes when a member of the military dies, and you see everyone salute that flag-covered coffin. But Dover is where the bodies go. So when the space shuttle crashed, the bodies went to Dover. When the Pentagon plane went down on 9/11, those bodies went to Dover. All of our CIA and secret spies across the globe, when they get shot in action, those bodies go to Dover. And as a result, Dover is a place full of secrets. And the morticians that work on those bodies are incredible. They'll spend 12 hours rewiring someone's jaw and smoothing it over with clay to make sure that a family can see their son's face one last time. And I was like, I need to have a hero like that. I want to have a hero who just takes care and shows these dead soldiers the dignity and respect that they deserve when their bodies come into Dover. So I had that Zig, who's like my belief of everything good in the universe. He believes that you can make the world a better place with compassion, with kindness, with some dignity. Just our true hero. And the other character, Nola, I was in a military museum that the army had filled with art. And again, as a comic book person, I'm like, why does the government have all this art? And they explained to me that since World War I, the U.S. government has had an actual painter on staff who paints disasters as they happen, whether it's storming the beaches of Normandy or Vietnam or 9/11. And I said to them, you're telling me everyone else is racing in with guns blazing, and you're telling me that you've got someone who's racing in with nothing but paintbrushes in their pockets? I'm like, that guy sounds crazy. I want to meet him. And they said to me, you mean her. You want to meet her. And I was like, oh my God. And that's where Nola was born. And Nola's the exact opposite of Zig. She believes that if you want the world to be a better place, you force it to be a better place. You take it by the throat and you force it to what you need it to be. And these two opposing views of the heroes of the Lightning Rod, and I'll just tell you very quickly, Lightning Rod opens with one of my greatest fears. In the opening scene, a man hands his car keys to a valet. But instead of driving to the parking lot to park the car, the valet hits the GPS, says, go home. And now he's headed to the man's home with his car keys and his house keys to rob him. But as the valet enters the man's house, someone's waiting with a gun. And this isn't a robbery, it's a trap. And when one of the victim's bodies goes to our hero, Jim Zagorowski, at Dover, he uncovers one of the U.S. government's most closely guarded secrets. And that's really, I just ruined chapter one of the Lightning Rod for you, but...
It's not even the chapter one, it's prologue.
It's the prologue. It's truly the prologue, but yeah. It basically begs the question, you know, what's the one secret no one knows about you? The way that I describe the guy who the valet parks the car of is Captain America. He's truly described in the book as Captain America because he looks just like Steve Rogers. And what was so funny is if I wrote that scene 20 years ago, my editor would say, no one knows what Steve Rogers looks like. And now I say Captain America, and I didn't get a single question from the editor.
Yeah, that's right there. Everybody gets it perfectly. Are there any other Marvel Easter eggs in the series that we can...
There have been Marvel Easter eggs in every book I've ever written. The reason I got into comics is I've been hiding, this is my 25th year, as I mentioned, in the very first book, the justices on the Supreme Court were named Veit, Osterman, Kovacs. You know, all seems so obvious now that I named them after the Watchmen, but back then, they would be like, on every book tour, maybe one or two people will be like, Meltzer, got that Watchmen reference you hid in there. But I put DC stuff, Marvel stuff, every book I've ever done, no one will ever find all of it. And I'm not talking about crappy, easy cuts like, oh, we named the law firm like Murdoch and, you know, like, no, I'm not going to give you like Nelson and Murdoch as the law firm. Like, I'm going to give you like the deep cut, like that there's the motorcycle rider and with a deep cut Ghost Rider reference or something that your parents don't know. And so, yes, the answer is yes, there's always stuff in there.
Yeah, I caught like a Kiesel and I was like,
oh, there is a Kiesel in there. I did put a Kiesel in there. I did. That's actually not the only one. There's a couple. I think there's a Romita in this one too. Oh, no, that was an Escape Artist. There's a Romita. I made him a general.
Reading Escape Artist now as a dad, You ding dong, you got me. You made me feel things. It's corny and it's cliched, but like your outlook on life and your feelings, they just change when you've got children. And it's the honest truth. And when you see these stories and read these stories of people who go through some heartbreaking things, it's very affecting.
No, I appreciate it. Listen, the whole thing between Zig and Nola as their characters, the one thing that is always true is Zig needs a daughter and Nola needs a father. And that is the true north of those characters. It's the true north of every scene. And it all comes from absolutely my love for my kids and what it's like to be a dad. And to write to that is like, I was like, I finally found the voice where I am now. When I wrote in my 20s, I wrote about being in your 20s and screwing around. And when I got married, I wrote about married couple. And when I had kids, maybe a character had a kid. But what I write about now is, as my mother said to me when we had our first kid, she said to me, now you understand how I love you. And I was like, oh, she's right.
Mm-hmm. I still want to keep on Escape Artist real quick because there's some cool stuff with Houdini. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, I, again, the comic book reader in me, was obsessed with magic. Of course, obsessed with Houdini. And, you know, it's why Doctor Strange appealed. It's not just that it's like, cool to do the hand gesture or cool to have the eye. It's Houdini was always a fascination because he was doing the impossible, right? And isn't that why we read comics? To see the impossible, to see someone use it for good. And I was doing research on him and found out at the time that Houdini, he was, to be very clear, the most famous performer in the entire world at the time. And he would travel everywhere and they knew him around the world, which now seems like an easy thing to do. But when there's no internet, to be as big in England as you are here or in Germany or wherever you are is an incredible feat. And the research I found out was that two things that just blew me away. One was that Houdini was so famous that he had his own secret service made up of these regular people, and that's how he would do his tricks. So when he would go to your town and he would say to the police, lock me up in your cuffs, and he'd get out of them, and you'd be like, how the heck does anyone do that? He's never met these people. What you didn't know is that 2 weeks before Houdini came to town, his secret service would come, figure out what kind of locks were on the jail cell, figure out what kind of cuffs were being used, would get the keys to all that. And when Houdini came, the fix was in. And it looks like the greatest magic trick in the world. I'm like, Houdini had his own secret service? That's a cool idea, right? It's like the Illuminati in Marvel. It's like, that's just a good idea. And I said, I got to use that. And then I also found out that Houdini worked with the government because he would go into these places and he would come back to the United States and report what their security was like. He was a spy for us. And I love that idea. And then my dear friend told me the best thing about magic. He said that magic, there's four types of magic. You can make something appear. You can make something disappear. You can move one thing from, you know, this spot to that spot. He said, but the hardest trick to do with is a fourth trick, and that is to transform. And as a writer, it was the best metaphor, right? Isn't that what we all do, especially when we go through a great tragedy? And again, the same story, whether it's Peter Parker or whether it's Houdini or whether it's Zig in The Escape Artist and the Lightning Rod or whether it's Nola, is you go through great tragedy and you don't get over it. Peter Parker never gets over it. And anyone who suffered anything great in your life, you know you'd never, ever get over it, and you shouldn't get over it. What you do is you transform into something new.
We've got the villains in the various books. When we first meet the Curtain,
oh yeah,
in Escape Artist, and then the Reds in the Lightning Rod. Just your names made me so happy. Give us some dish on these baddies.
The funny thing is only here do people understand, like, I'm just writing comics, right? My characters, the bad guys, literally named the Curtain because everyone knows, like, when the curtain falls, you're done. It's a super bad guy name. It is. I'm writing comics. And if you read comics, you're going to like the book. But, like, it's just so funny because I go on these shows and they're like, tell us the literary background behind it. I'm like, well, first I read Son of Origins at Marvel, and then I read Teen Titans, and then I read, and like literally, like that's what it is. That's where it comes from. It's not some graduate level English class. It's just reading the entire runs of DC and Marvel for 40 years of my life. But they come from those places. I still use the same technique when I was writing, when I did Doctor Impossible in Justice League, or whether I did, you know, the Spider-Man page for Marvel 1000. Like, it's the same thing. Is you gotta find the things that have that human touch. And yes, you want to have a good bad guy, but they have to be human people. Like, so I love that the Reds, you know, they're two redheads you meet and they call themselves the Reds. Why? Not because they think it's a cool name. It's just that no one can forget it. It's good marketing.
It's great marketing.
Even in the Assassin game, you need to have good marketing. They're both Reds. People remember that? Great. but they have backstories, right? Like you can see that, you know, Reagan, what her loves are, what her desires are, what she cares about, who she cares about. And obviously, I don't want to ruin her partner, but her so-called mute partner has his own backstory too, and his own loves and his own desires. And to me, we all know the best villains are the ones that don't just come and go, mwahaha, and let's take over the world, but they feel like real people. And I've read, you know how many Kingpin stories, but I remember watching that Kingpin origin story that Netflix did with the painting, that one episode. And I just remember going, that's worthy of the comics. I care about this Wilson Fisk as much as I've ever cared about any Wilson Fisk. And I've read a million origins of him being made fun of when he's a little kid. And I've read a million, you know, we've read him a million times. But they pulled out something human in his love that was so breathtaking. And I think the best villains are when you can find that heart in them. Not the black heart, not the evil soul, but the heart that actually beats like a human being. And then, you know, that's what Thanos did so well. You felt like, I may not agree, but man, that guy has a point of view. And Killmonger in Black Panther, yeah. I mean, I feel like people were like, oh, he may be right here. Who am I rooting for now? And that's when you know you're on, you know, I remember you'll see in the end of The Lightning Rod when the Reds are closing in, there's points where a couple of early readers who have read it said to me like, oh, I feel for them there.
Well, before we let you go, we talked about Chris Eliopoulos a little bit. You do a whole bunch of stuff with Chris. What are some of those things that our fans can check out?
Yeah, so Chris and I do the Ordinary People Change the World series. And we just came out with I Am Muhammad Ali and I Am Malala Yousafzai. And the books were always designed to give our kids better heroes to look up to. I was just really, Chris and I both are tired of the poison that online and on TV that our kids are being fed every day. They're just being destroyed by social media, destroyed by swiping and looking at nonsense on Instagram. And we were like, how do you give your kids real values today? If comics taught me one thing, I don't like bullies. And when I saw that Muslims were being picked on and targeted over these past number of years, and forget about how even longer before that, I was like, oh, okay, you're going to target Muslims? We're going to do two Muslims. We're doing Muhammad Ali, we're going to do Malala, and we're going to do two books so that kids out there can actually see what an amazing, wonderful, beautiful person looks like who happens to be Muslim and who teaches you how to fight back against injustice. So those lessons that I got from, you know, Marvel about fighting, you know, I wrote Stan Lee's obituary for Entertainment Weekly when he died. And one of the things I talked about is how I got my values from Stan Lee. In the Stan soapboxes in the back of Marvel Comics, he would talk about standing up against injustice, standing up against racism, standing up against people who are picking on anyone who's black or brown or anything else. And this is, you know, back in the 60s, Stan is saying this. And for me, that's what Chris and I are trying to do with I Am Muhammad Ali, with I Am Malala Yousafzai. We're doing I Am Dolly Parton and I Am Pei are coming up in June. And then after that, in September, we just announced I Am Superman, I Am Batman, I Am Wonder Woman. And I know it's distinguished competition, but our love of comics is we're doing not just Ordinary People Change the World, but stories that change the world. Because we truly believe, same for Marvel or Star Wars or DC, that the creativity that these creators gave us, whether it's Stan and Jack or whether it's, you know, Jerry and Joe or Bill Finger and Bob Kane, that those stories have power over us and they have lessons that are worth learning and inspiring our kids with. So we're expanding the whole series. It's not just Ordinary People Change the World, it's now Stories Change the World. And so that's coming up in September.
That's awesome. Last thing, Brad, and obviously you want to write that Avengers JLA. Give me one Marvel character you want on that Avengers squad if you ever write it.
Oh, I mean, the thing about my Avengers JLA is it's not my JLA and my Avengers. It's the ones that should be, right? You know who, I don't even have to tell you who they are. They're the ones that George Perez has been drawing since the very first version that he was supposed to first draw. That's the version I want to do. Like, I've been writing that Captain America Batman fight in my head for 25, 30 years now.
Brad Meltzer, always a pleasure. Good to see you. Good to talk with you. And everybody, go check out The Lightning Rod, available now.
That was delightful. Of course, you can pick up his new book, The Lightning Rod, wherever you get your books. I highly recommend. This is a great moment to go to a local bookshop.
Yeah.
And pick up a book. Put it on your list. And next week, we're going to have on Jason Concepcion, podcast host extraordinaire and Marvel fan. We get to talk about a lot of fun stuff with him.
He's just great. He's a hoot and a holler. We talk about his history with stuff. We'll get into it next week. With that in mind, it is time for our question of the week. And so we were talking about the Spidey 60th anniversary Beyond Amazing live stream. And so we're celebrating Spidey's 60th birthday this year. We're going to be having a ton of celebrations, especially further on into the year. But, you know, now in light of this cool live stream that you're doing, Lorraine, I think there's a fun question to be had for our question of the week, which is, what present would you give Spider-Man for his birthday?
You know, I was thinking about this, and I'd like to go back in time to the first Spider-Man story, Amazing Fantasy 15, and I'd just like to give that kid a gift card, just some money, because he was so broke all the time. And I would just like to be like, we took up a collection, we made a GoFundMe, you know, buy a backpack, stop making it out of webs.
Oh, poor kid. I would give him a box of spiders. You know, I would just be like, hey, you're Spider-Man, right? Here's a box of spiders. You probably like that.
I think he'd be terrified by that.
Sure, but like, it's the thought that counts.
Get him a sidekick, like a little tarantula.
Ooh, and use some PIM growth formula and make the tarantula really giant.
I don't think he would like this.
No? Like a really hairy, rideable spider?
I mean, that is kind of cool.
It's pretty cool.
If you could ride it like a horse and it was smart and it wouldn't bite you. Pretty good.
Spiders eat bugs. They eat bad bugs. Most spiders are doing good work.
But would the spider eat the villains that he webs up?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what they do.
That's just, hey, too bad. So sorry. You shouldn't do crime.
I don't think that's his vibe, but you know what? To each their own.
Yeah.
You can tweet us your answers using the hashtag This Week in Marvel. Email them to twimpodcast@marvel.com, or you could send a message to our Facebook page at facebook.com/thisweekinmarvel. And of course, please make sure to tell us if it is quote unquote okay to read, so we can read it here on the show like we're about to right now.
Yeah.
All right. The question from last week was, which Marvel live action series that are coming to Disney Plus are you most excited to see when they arrive on March 16th? Of course, we're talking about all of those wonderful series that include our street level heroes plus Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
All right. First up, we've got Heather G at the _original, which says, most looking forward to rewatching season one of Jessica Jones with the incomparable David Tennant and his chilling take of The Purple Man. Kristen Ritter was born to play Jess, and I hope we get to see Danielle at some point in the future. Of course, Heather is talking about the character of Kilgrave, and in the comics we know him as the Purple Man, and Danielle is, in the comics, the daughter of Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. I love all these hopes that you have, Heather, and I hope you enjoy your rewatch.
Man, that is a fun first season.
It's a lot. It's so good, but man, he's such a great villain.
He's so creepy, but also she's just like such a perfect casting. Like, just so excellent. Mm-hmm. Next up, we have Damon at Damon Tweet, who said, season one of Jessica Jones is one of the best pieces of television easily. The Purple Man is menacing and unpredictable, and Jessica, despite her flaws, is incredibly likable with the great cast of characters beside her. Oh, yeah, and she's got all those crazy neighbors. Man, that's a real fun show.
Yeah.
I got to tour that set, actually, and walk through her apartment building, which was just a huge set piece, and it was honestly really fun.
Shaw at SuperShaw10 says, Daredevil, because it's my all-time favorite Marvel series. Glad it's finally home with the rest of the MCU. Smiley face.
Yeah. Ajman Rafi at Impulse02099 said, Daredevil is where it's at. So stoked to rewatch my favorite Marvel series on Disney Plus soon. High fives.
Nicole Wolin at NicoleW1973 says, Daredevil, of course. I could watch it over and over, and it's always exciting. Writing, acting, everything is perfect.
And also, just like, remember the hallway fights? The hallway fights were just like iconic.
Delightful.
Charlaco Scipio Jr. at Hey Charlaco said, I'm pumped for Daredevil on Disney Plus. Charlie Cox has done the character justice, and the staircase scene was immaculate, and the prison scene with Frank can only be rivaled by Cap's elevator scene in Marvel Studios' Captain America and the Winter Soldier. Man, I'm saying, the fight scenes were friggin' killer.
Mm-hmm. D-Riv at DGRiv says, I've revisited Daredevil every year since it first premiered on Netflix, and I'm looking forward to doing so again. Tom Pelfrey and Jessica Straub's performances in Iron Fist are also great to watch again and again.
As you might remember, Tom and Jessica, of course, are the Meechums, those hoity-toity siblings of the upper crust from Iron Fist past. Next up, we've got Jace Cornell at Jace Cornell, who said, I really hope we can get to see more of Finn Jones as Iron Fist. Season 2 proved he can be great in the role. Him alongside Mike Coulter is one of the most fun dynamics the Defender series had to offer.
The Uber Nerd at Palinor 2017 says, love them all, but I've missed my man Luke Cage, the hero of Harlem. That show had the best style and my favorite Marvel soundtrack / score. Hell yeah.
The showrunner, Cheohodari Coker, was so amazing. He knew, I mean, he was a music journalist and he knows so much about music, but that was sick. I mean, that was a great show. And Alfre Woodard as Mariah, like icons only. I mean, Mahershala Ali as Cottonmouth. I mean, that cast is crazy.
So friggin' good.
Ashley Rosario Wojenko at Wojenko12 said, definitely Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I love how the show expands upon familiar ideas from the movies while still being its own thing, providing a lot of different and intriguing concepts that show how vast and interesting the Marvel universe is. Yeah, they really, honestly, they explored so many fun things in like obscure characters and like brought them to life in really cool ways. Super fun.
Yeah. I always love the little Crusher Creel bit of business, the Absorbing Man stuff.
Yeah, he kept coming back too.
Yeah. Tessa Firefox VB at Firefox Tessa tweets, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that show that got me through some tough times and also gave me new friends. Just an amazing community, cast, and crew.
Oh, it really did have such a fun cast. I mean, Clark Gregg, obviously fabulous. Elizabeth Henstridge, just one of the sweetest human beings that's ever been. She, of course, plays Gemma Simmons and is just the sweetest little peanut. So many great folks in that cast. Oh, and Ming-Na Wen, come on.
Legend.
Next up, we've got Mountain Meg at Meg Stalker that says, can't wait to read this series, Captain Carter. Loved the This Week in Marvel podcast interview with Ryan and Lorraine. Last week with Jamie McKelvey about the series, Chef's Kiss. Yes, shout out to Jamie McKelvey. If you didn't listen to that episode, go back one episode and check it out. He is the best and honestly, huge impact on the Marvel universe.
So good. We've got an email in here from Georgia Brimley who writes, in last week's This Week in Marvel podcast, I got excited when you mentioned Jessica Jones is coming to Disney Plus in the US and UK, as I am British and had grown up watching David Tennant in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
David being in a TV series, which is American and Marvel, is quote unquote marvelous. And I hope everyone in America enjoys David's talent, even as the villain of the show. Love from England, UK. Georgia, one. Terrific. We are huge David Tennant fans. He will always be my doctor.
He's my doctor too.
Always. Forever.
He's not my physician, but like my Doctor Who.
No, he's my physician as well.
How do I get on that insurance? He's so nice. It costs also. A lot of money. Just so lovely. Just a delight. All right. Next up, we've got an email from Justin Billings, who said, hi there, Justin here. And my answer to the question of the week for me is The Punisher, then Iron Fist. It's sad that they didn't get to finish them, but still great in my eyes. And to answer last week's question, it would have to be the new Demon Skull for The Punisher, which I believe that was our question about costume designs. What's your favorite costume design? Good one.
All right, we've got a Facebook message here from Damon Bozer who says, when the Marvel Netflix series come to Disney Plus, I am excited to rewatch Daredevil, Punisher, and Jessica Jones' series again. Here's hoping they get new seasons. Love me some Marvel street-level action.
Yeah. All right, next up, we have a Facebook message from Raphael Michelangelo Perry, who said, it's really cool that Marvel characters that I love, my son is starting to enjoy. He's 2.5 years old, and where he really loves it are the Hot Wheels cars with different Marvel themes. Thank you, Mattel, for the great designs. He can name each character and get so pumped when I buy him a new car. Also love the Marvel hats New Era came out with over the years. I'm always wearing a different Marvel character hat, and my son always helps take it off my head and sports it, especially my Daredevil hat.
I know that feeling very well, Raphael.
And then he goes on to answer our question of the week. I have to say, the first season of Jessica Jones was amazing. Kristen Ritter was great, and David Tennant made an excellent villain. I would most likely go back and watch the season along with the second season of Daredevil. Not to say the other shows and seasons weren't great, they were, but the introduction of the Punisher and Elektra was just an amazing story.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right, one more email this week. This one comes in from Jenny Huang, who we haven't heard from in a while. Hello, Jenny. Hi, I just listened to last week's podcast. It was interesting, as usual. I'm excited to see Daredevil again. He is my favorite superhero. Hooray.
A great bunch of answers. Thank you all for messaging us. Mm-hmm. However you reach out to us, we always love it.
Agreed. All right, that is it for us. This episode of This Week in Marvel was produced by Zachary Goldberg, Isabel Robertson, Lorraine Sink, and Ryan Penagos.
Our senior manager of audio production and development is Brad Barton.
Jill DeBoff is our director of audio.
And special thanks to Gritty and the British Kitty Committee. That's right, Gritty and the British Kitty Committee are here for all of your Agents of Chaos needs. Gritty and the British Kitty Committee.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Lorraine.
This is Marvel.
Your universe.
You.
You.